Hello, gunners and gun enthusiasts, and welcome back to this week's edition of Guns Over Texas. I'm range operator Jeff Sanford, joined in studio by Gary Montgomery.
Thank you, sir.
And our law enforcement contributor, Jason Berry.
Always a pleasure, sir.
Welcome back to Guns Over Texas, gentlemen. We're here in our closet on a lovely Sunday afternoon doing this recording. What's new with you guys this week?
You know, same usual story. Life has been too busy to really get to play with much. Although I did get to fondle the CZ Shadow 2 in your cabinet over there.
Yes.
And that's kind of a tempting pistol. It's $1,300, but it's a tempting pistol.
They're fine though, man. CZ makes a really underrated gun. They're big in the competitive world, you know, but it's not something we don't, the P10 is the first CZ that I've got. Or that I've seen in the almost 10 years that we've been open, that customers are coming in and going, hey, man, do you have that CZ? You know, the Shadow.
And a sentence you never hear in here. Hey, man, have you got a CZ?
Yeah.
Well, but it doesn't have the typical CZ proportions either.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't. Now, the P10 is their new, it's like a Glock 19 similar size gun. I believe it's a 15 plus one also.
So it's the 8,000th gun to come out and say we're the Glock 19 killer that still hasn't killed the Glock 19?
And you know what?
Yeah, pretty much.
It's the first one that I've got. You know, we've had the APX. We've had the FNS, the FN509. You know, there's been a lot
of
guns.
Strike one and the strike two.
There's been a lot of guns that have come out and we've gone, okay, you know, this is cool. I like the way it works. I like shooting it, but I don't see why I would, you know, get rid of my M&Ps or get rid of my 19. Yeah.
What's going to make me jump ship?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. But this P10, if I was a Glock 19 owner and I was heavily invested in Glocks like Jason is,
yep,
I would probably drop them for the P10.
That's a hell of a claim.
It is. When you put it in your hand, the only other gun that I've seen the sight sit as low in the hand has been that Strike One.
Right.
And
struck all the way out of the market.
It did.
But I enjoyed shooting the Strike One when we had one here. I liked shooting it, but, I didn't like that the rear sights were part of the end receiver plate, receiver cover plate. That was stupid on a level of stupid that can't be fathomed. But the gun itself shot fine and looked nice, but it just, why change?
Well, Salient and Prime Manufacturing have bought the rights or the patent to the Strike One,
You lost me at Salient.
you know, their locking lug system is one of the reasons that it shot as well as it did. Now, they're fixing a lot of those issues, like the rear sight's not going to fit into the back plate like the Strike One did. It's going to take standard Glock sights. They've made a lot of improvements on it. Now they're just waiting on the ATF approval to import them from Germany. So they were going to be building them in-house in Las Vegas.
Well, they were building them in Italy at first, even though it was quote-unquote Russian design.
That was Arsenal. Yeah. And Salient planned on building them in Las Vegas.
Yeah.
And then SHOT Show happened, and they took way more orders than their facility could do. Huh. So they farmed it out to a German manufacturer. I'm not sure who's doing it. But now they're just waiting on the end.
How many German manufacturers are there?
Yeah.
There's Mauser or HK or SIG or...
Well, we know it can't be SIG because SIG lost their export license out of Germany.
Mauser or HK or who's left over
Walther.
There? Walther?
Yeah, that's about it.
Don't know. So, but I'm eagerly anticipating them. But back to the P10.
Yes.
Very interesting gun. And, you know, I've gotten a chance to, I was talking about him when I went to the show in January, a distributor show in January in South Carolina. That was the gun of the show, you know, in my, with the exception of the X5, but that I didn't look at as a primarily carry gun. This was a carry gun, you know, and, we've had a couple of them come through. I've had an opportunity to put about 100 rounds through the two that have come through so far. And I am exceptionally impressed with the gun. So there will be one here this evening. Our buddy Dez is going to be here, and he's bringing his. And he has changed his CZs. He's been carrying the he's been using the Shadow, if I'm not mistaken, in the or a 75. That's CZ 75. That's been all done up by Cajun Gunworks. That's been his IDPA gun, and he recently switched for the P10. So you guys will get an opportunity to try it out as Jason is dry heaving into the microphone.
Having owned a CZ designed gun, And
CZ design gun.
One of the shittier CZ clones of a Tanfoglio. The reverse rail bullshit and some of the other
stuff.
Well,
that's just it. The P10 doesn't seem to have that.
It doesn't. No.
So they got away from the CZ part of being CZ and came on board with the rest of every other manufacturer ever?
Yeah, with their first striker-fired gun, they've got the slide that sits outside the rails instead of inside the rails.
So by going away from the CZ template, now they made something you liked. Because I quite frankly finger banged the CZ Shadow that you have out there, and I was one of the ones that looked at it and went, bleh.
Not the first time that I've said leave it to Jason to ruin a good time.
But I like the single action trigger. The trigger on is phenomenal and doubles in single action. The reverse rails suck. Anytime you're going to try to go overhand or do anything with the reverse rail suck, and it has extended slide stop and extended magazine release and the smallest safety I have ever seen on any gun ever. What the hell were they thinking? Because I know they make a competition style safety, and they put an oversized mag release and an oversized slide release on it, and then an undersized super duper non-existent hard to hit safety.
It's not hard to hit, but extended safety for it, I'm sure.
But if you're marketing it as the competition gun, why'd they do that to the safety? I was just sitting there like,
agreed.
That,
yeah.
That,
Other than the slide sitting inside the rails on the Shadow guns, I'm a big fan of them. I think they shoot marvelously.
I think they feel great. I think, in fact, they feel a lot like, you know, a corrected Browning high power. You know, you don't have the hammer bite issue or any of that kind of stuff. But yeah, I agree with Jason. I don't like the slide profile because it's inside the rails, and yes, that makes it impossible to get your hands on.
And That's three of us that agree that way.
I'm going to throw some more heresy out there as long as we are on the subject, and you mentioned the Browning high power. I own a high power, and I don't see why all the love, even the customized super tricked out ones when I played with them, and it's like, wow, this is like a $2,800 high power. And I get done shooting it and go, yeah,
it's a high power.
I'll go back to my $400 Glock. I don't care.
Recognize where the high power starts. Remember,
But it's the product improved 1911, and it ain't any better than a 1911.
No, it's not better than a 1911 because it wasn't finished by Browning.
Yeah.
So there's that issue. But, you know, if you roll back to the 1960s or the 1950s or the 1940s.
You didn't have any other choice. It was great.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's the thing is that your other option was the 1911. And then you're talking about a 45. So it's only a 7 or 8 shooter at that time, maybe 9 on the outside. And, you know, the other issues are that at that time, your only real source of 1911s is Colt. Most of them are old, you know, surplus guns that have been beat to crap.
Yep.
And so along comes the Browning High Power, and it's 13 rounds. And, you know, we come back to the time period and the way people are thinking. They go, oh, it's got a magazine safety. So here's something it offers that the 1911 does not.
Yeah.
So, you know, in that era, it's not a bad gun. But by today's standards, much like the 1911, we've shot a lot of people since then.
Uh-huh. Yep.
And so we've learned a few things, and we build guns better.
Nighthawk Custom was doing a run about 8 months.
Yes.
And allegedly, it was their top-selling gun while they were doing it.
Now, really?
Yeah.
It might have been, but I know they were like $2,800 minimum.
Yeah.
Because I saw it and went, ooh, because my dad had a Browning High Power when I was growing up, and I've always wanted to have another one because that one got away. And when I saw that price, I was like, yeah, no.
I only own one because it was my dad's.
Yeah.
So it has sentimental value, but as far as shootability value and anything else, I'm very high on the slide bite. It's got the spur hammer. I need to. It's just,
all of those things. And those things can be corrected. They were corrected in later iterations of the gun, but it's an expensive gun to
correct. Is the gun more valuable in its original 1970s glory than if I mess with it?
Right.
I need to get better grips for it because it's got Pacmars. It needs the original grips. And my dad was actually good with a lot of the stuff that I got from him.
Yeah.
He had the original wooden grips for some of the Smith & Wessons, which, you know, grips alone are $200 or $300 for some guns. You know?
Right.
Don't throw this stuff away, Dad. But, somewhere down the line, they threw away the original Browning grips that came with it and threw on some rubber Pacmars that are worth $8 today that were worth $8 then.
Yeah.
You know?
But back on the P10, the more I look at this gun, It is a rehashed Glock 19. That's my problem.
Done right.
What's done wrong about the 19?
It has a better feel than the 19 in the hands. It's lower in the hands than the 19 does, and the trigger is butter. Ours weighed in straight out of the box, 4.5 pounds, and really, really nice.
How much are magazines?
That I don't know yet.
Don't know
yet.
How
many holster options do I have for it?
fits in M&P holsters and some Glock 19 holsters.
Oh, so they really went off the rails and they copied everyone else's design and their holster fit and uses
makes it easier.
Wow, no wonder
easier this is for the M&P guy to transition, easier for the 19 guy to transition.
This is literally like dressing yourself up as Brad Pitt so you can bang Angelina Jolie.
I'm having a problem with finding the issue with that.
You make that one sound like a bad thing.
Yeah, well, she is a little skinny for my taste.
She's a little on the skinny side, I agree. But she's got luscious lips.
Not really
lips.
My thing, but...
Anyway.
Wait, wait. Jason just said not really his thing.
After I'm not showing a big Angelina. No. I like petite gals like that, but Angelina Jolie per se is not my thing. She's... I don't know.
The Billy Bob Thornton thing ruined her for you, didn't it?
Yeah, I'm going to carry around a vial of blood around my neck and some other stuff. It's not the look so much as
making out with her brother at an award show.
Yeah, there's. But then again,
it's a Hollywood psycho.
That just lets you know that nothing's off limits. So maybe I'm back all in, guys. Slide my chips back to the table. Crazy in the head, crazy in the bed. Well, slide them all in.
All right, so what are you going to do when you shoot this P10 tonight and you find out how much you really like it?
I guarantee you, Gary, I like it.
He's going to come back in and he's going to go, you know, I shot it and it was nice, but, you know, I like my 19 and better.
There's so many guns
we've
shot.
I'm so invested in the Glock platform, I'm never even going to give it a chance.
Right.
No. What have we said, though? I like the HK VP9. I like the SIG 320. I like the Beretta APX. There's a lot of things out there I shoot and like. But do I like it enough to say, man, I'm going to have 10 magazines. I'm going to have to get the gun. I'm going to have to get two or three holsters, a duty holster, a concealable inside the waistband, concealable outside the waistband holster, night sight. I mean, am I really wanting to not just factor in the cost of the gun, but another $400 to $500 in accessories, support gear, and all this other stuff? Do I like it that much more, and what does it bring to the table? And the answer for most of them is it doesn't bring anything to the table that I don't already have. Now, except more pain in the ass.
I'll agree with that on just about everything that we've seen over the last several years.
Right.
But it's a gun I'm excited about. And you know what? If I didn't already scrap all my M&P stuff to go to the 320, I might have been investing in one or two of these.
Well, and if I hadn't already bought every gun that sits in your case that no one will buy...
And sold it back to his brother.
That's the thing. Jason would rather invest in the Kel-Tec, the Beretta Picos, the Walther 99, you know.
You were looking at a P99
I was looking
today.
At a Walther P99 today, yes, that has been sitting in your case for a year, untouched and unasked to even be seen. And for another year, it's going to sit there. So we're going to discuss you know price off air.
I would rather it sit there for another year than give you a discount.
And give you the opportunity to sell it to Mac.
But I wouldn't do that.
Yes, you
now,
would.
Now, in the you grand
demonstrated
scheme of
you
things,
would do that.
in the grand scheme of things, the only reason I have a lot of the guns I have is sentimental value, or it used to be a gun that I was issued and or carried on duty. And the Walther P99 series is a copy of the same as the Smith & Wesson P99 series. And quite frankly, an agency I was with quite some time ago, that was an adopted gun of the agency.
You can say it. It was like 20 years ago. You're old.
I'm not old. I'm old. Anyway, way back in the day, that may or may not have been the gun that was getting ready to come to us. And
Grandpa just said he's not old.
I know, right?
Everybody's a comedian.
Only one of us in this studio can say that he's a grandpa.
Indeed.
Or a paw, for that matter. Y'all got to catch up. Shit. But in the grand scheme of things, that was a tested and vetted gun, and I had the opportunity to test fire it before it was even on the adoption list. And, you know, what do you think of it? Write down what you think of it, blah, blah, blah. So I evaluated one a long time ago, and I wanted to hate it, and I didn't want it, and blah, blah, blah. And after several hundred rounds and messing with it, I was like, you know what? I could rock this. And so that's the exact same thing we're dealing with here. It's something I might not like, but after I shot it, I'd go, okay, yes, I like it. Am I going to run out and buy it? No. But if it's going to come issued to me with mags and night sights and holsters, yeah, I wouldn't feel unsafe at all carrying it. Mm-hmm. And when I saw it in your cabinet and it's still got the dust on it from sitting there for a year untouched, and it's like, has anybody asked to see this gun? Nope, never. But I remember evaluating that gun when it came out, and I liked it during the evaluation. So, yeah.
I don't blame you. It feels good in the hand. Trigger on it's fantastic.
It really is.
You know, but then you
I'll never find holsters, night sights, or mags for
there
it.
There you go. But, buy a $300 gun, and then you have to pay $70 for magazines and such.
$300.
Oh, for the normal person. For you, $399.
You got to make up some Mac money?
Yeah, that's right. Gary, what are you shooting tonight? We're taking Chuck's class again. Tonight is going to be the second Sunday of every month. It's the CSAT skills testing. That's Paul Howe Combat Shooting and Tactics skills testing.
Which if you ever have an opportunity, which actually that opportunity is dwindling, but if you have an opportunity to train with Paul Howe, it's highly recommended. And Chuck recently did that and got exposed to that sunshine. But tonight I'm going to do another session. This will be my third session or so with the P320X5. And, you know, I like that gun more than I thought I would. But I do have some things to detract from it on. Like the frame is unique, as we know, to the X5. But I actually prefer the P320 full-size frame. I don't know what it is, but the X5 frame seems flat in all the wrong spots for me, and it doesn't seem to allow quite as high a grip for me as I would like. But that's the gun that I'm going to be shooting tonight, just to continue getting trigger time with that. And you know, the plan is next weekend to finish the comparisons between the 34 and the M&P and the 320. But right now, I'm liking the 320. Now, Jason was giving us crap before we started that, you know, you and I are early adopters, and we had to point out this is now at least the second generation of the P320. I happened to go back and look at a photo that I took of the 320 and the VP9 when those guns first came out.
Did it say how long ago that was? Was there a time?
It came out in October of 2014.
Yeah.
Okay. So we're at almost 3 years.
They came out about August of 2014 because they came out the month that we were asked to pack our shit and not come back to KSCV.
There you go.
I know exactly when they came out.
Correct.
And when they came out, I think all three of us were saying that the VP9 was the winner.
No, I said Jason the 320 early on.
Was big on the 320.
I was much bigger on the 320.
Were you?
Yes.
We can go back
and check the tapes. I was the only one that said if I had to pick one or the other to carry today, I would have picked the 320.
Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that's not a bad choice. I mean, I'll still say that even now. Yeah.
And it didn't mean I didn't like the VP9. I did like the VP9, but I saw a lot more potential with the 320 even then of saying, oh, I can switch all the grip frames and sizes. It's not stupid panels. It's not this. I can access everything. I saw a lot of potential in that.
Yeah. You know, the VP9 SK is their new smaller. It's like a Glock 26 size. Mm-hmm. And that's something that I could see myself getting one of those just for a little bit easier carry.
That's another gun. If I had to switch a platform, I didn't like the VP9 full size that much. I was like, eh. The subcompact compared to a 26, I kind of dig that subcompact was nice.
Yeah, I do too.
It's a hair bigger than a 26, but it's smaller than a 19. It fits in that sweet spot there.
Yeah.
And so does the M&P 9 compact, but I never liked the M&P 9 compact
at all. I don't either.
It just didn't.
It was always kind of a weird spot.
It never kind of worked.
It's a tweener, not quite big enough.
Yeah.
But the whole thing, it's a tweener, and this SK is a tweener. It's bigger than a 26, smaller than a 19,
but all three fingers on the grip.
Right. Something about it. It's the sum of the parts. You can't put your finger on it. It works.
Well, the thing that I've always liked about the VP9, and I'll say this is only natural southpaw in the room, is that for a southpaw, right out of the box, the gun's ready to work. You don't even with the 320, as well as that gun works for a southpaw, you still have to swap over the magazine catch and that sort of thing. You don't have to do that with the VP9.
So they made it so that God's Mistakes could handle it right out of the box.
Just say God's Mistake, you pudgy little son.
But I use the right hand, not the devil's claw.
And the VP9 has that paddle underneath the trigger guard.
Right.
As the magazine release, which you can use either side.
I'm used to it now, but it's funky if you're not used to it. My middle finger of my support hand to drop the magazine.
My wife was using a P30 as her first duty gun, and we got a chance to go out to the ranch and you know, you go to the ranch, it's one of those things, you better have at least 1,000 rounds of handgun ammo on you.
Because Greg's going to work, he's going to work your ass on the handgun.
Yeah, and so I was using her P30 a lot, just to, you know, just do something different, you know. And it took a while to get used to that paddle, but once I got used to it, I found that paddle to be faster than using the using my thumb on the magazine
and
release.
It's truly ambidextrous, and right. if you have it in a compact area, waistband or whatever, you can't accidentally trip the button
right.
like you can on other stuff. So it has a lot
it
of
advantages.
It has
its advantages.
Speaking of, just I don't know if we ever mentioned it to Gary, Greg was bored of us shooting in the backyard, and did you hear this one yet, Gary?
No.
Greg was bored of us shooting in the backyard uh-huh. and decided that we didn't have moving targets. He wanted moving targets, but he hadn't installed them yet. So rather than move the targets, he decided to move us and threw us in the gator and drove us on passes of drive-by shooting in the gator
nice.
At like 12 miles an hour over the rocks.
Down the rifle range. I was Very in the cool. back seat, and Jason's butt was puckered so much he could barely even move his arms because I was.
Well,
I was shooting
I'd try to swing
him.
Sideways to get stuff, and I'd realize there's a muzzle about a foot away from my head. That was.
I knew what I was doing getting in the back seat.
And then Greg, when we drive by like four times and not hit like an 8-inch piece of steel, because he's doing, you know, like I say, about 10 or 12 miles an hour over gravel in the gator, just bouncing us around. And, you know, Greg's like, well, you guys just need to slow down and he'd take out his gun and he's steering with one hand and shooting with one hand out the front of the no windshield gator. Pa-ding! See, that's how it's done, guys. I've never done this before either. It's not like it's my range and my gator and I practice. First time I ever did it. So I'll hit the 8-inch plate while moving with one hand.
From further away where you guys are shooting.
Yeah. I know. I love you, Greg, but God damn it. It's like, I'm just going to holster up and sit here in shame.
And he wears a tutu like a man, too.
You know, when we were doing that shooting from the vehicle, uh-huh. my M&P, I wasn't hitting shit. But when I had the 1911 out, 9mm 1911, yeah. I was doing really well.
Yeah.
You know, and so that it may have its place for me, but, you know.
And just
I
in
sold
case
it.
You're on a gator sideways.
Yeah. Right.
It's not often I'm going to find myself on a gator doing 12 miles an hour shooting steel targets, you know.
It could happen.
Well, I hope it happens again. Yeah, yeah, I've got a 320 compact with a Romeo on it that needs to give that a shot. Yeah, I think that'd be a good time.
We mentioned early adopters earlier, and so far the SIG is exactly 2 years out, or a little over 2 years out there. But early adopters for this, it's not really an early adopter thing because it's really a growth, a refinement of the 250 series.
Mm-hmm.
So they already had the chassis working. They already had right. certain bugs worked out. Now, there's other guns that SIG has come out with that sometimes they fix and move forward, and sometimes they just say, screw it. And just, if you own one, you're just screwed. They're not going to fix it. They're mm-hmm. not going to work on it. They're not going to do anything.
We've given SIG a lot of love over the last few shows, so Jason, let it all out.
I'm going at this because they just came out with the new gun, and I don't want to mispronounce the name of the stupid thing here.
The
Virtus. And why they have to come up with strange, stupid names, I don't know. But the Virtus, I assume it's Latin for virtuous or something like that. But the MCX Virtus is their evolution of the MCX carbine. And the MCX carbine, for those who don't know, it's a modular AR-based carbine, but it's a gas piston operated. And it basically uses what looks like a chopped in half AR bolt carrier group. And the spring arrangement's a little bit different on it, so it can have a folding stock. It doesn't rely on a buffer and a buffer tube like it traditionally would. It's a neat little carbine, but all the AR controls are in the same place. I got zero problem with it on that level. I like the design. I like the way it works. And, Jeff, you and I shot one in here a couple times. It's a nose-heavy pig was my only complaint. Mm-hmm. It was nose-heavy with a folding stock. But I still like it. Anyway, now they're on the Virtus, which is Gen 3 of that particular carbine. Because they've already had the MCX, and they had major recall issues with that, and they came out with a refined Gen 2 version of it, and now they're on the Virtus, which is not the Gen 1 or Gen 2. It's a whole other thing that I don't think they want to call Gen 3 in 3 or 4 years, but let's face reality. They've had some major issues here because they keep having to go back to the drawing board with this thing.
I had a few of the MCXs transferred in here that had to go back to the factory, and when they came back, they were M400s. So
if you own an original MCX and it's working for you, well, I'm glad. But if you ever want spare parts or other things that are not backwards compatible with an AR platform of some kind, you may want to get on the horn and buy anything you might need, any springs or firing pins or anything like that, because it looks like Gen 1 and 2 just might be left hanging. Kind of like the MCX, or pardon me, the MPX, the little MP5 clone. They're on Gen 2 of that right now, and they've changed the magazines and some other internal parts right now because the Gen 1 had issues, but now there's a difference in the magazines, and if you have a Gen 1 and you don't have a lot of Gen 1 mags, well, Sig's cranking out Gen 2 mags now.
Oh shit, I don't think owners of MCX have anything to worry about, because I mean, they're still selling parts for the 239, the 290, you know.
They're guns that are still in production. Well, not the 290.
Golly. It actually, yeah, 290 is still in production.
And I
don't know
the one
how many of them they're producing, because it's one of those things I never hear anybody say, hey, you got that P290? Yeah.
You had a P290 in here back in the day that you tried to unload on me, and I foolishly said no, and I thought about it a week or two and said, hey, you know what? I kind of like it. It's a flat little polymer, double action only, nice little 9mm carry gun. I have zero issue with the gun. And I think it was supposed to be an answer to like a Glock 26, but it was a single stack little nine, like a 6 or 7 round 9, good appendix carry, exposed hammer gun.
It's a two-finger gun unless you have the giant grip on it.
Yeah. Right. But I actually liked it, and it just, man, they still make it. I'm amazed because it just seemed to go away. They don't advertise it, that's for damn sure. Yeah. But I had no problem with the gun whatsoever and should have jumped on it when you were trying to quote-unquote do me a favor and let me have it. I got rid of that piece of shit. Oh, you mean the one you were trying to sell me? I liked it.
When it comes to the double action single stack nines, I'd rather.
But
have
this is a double. This was a double action only trigger, mm-hmm. external trigger. It was much like the DAC. It was a lightweight double action only trigger and polymer single stack nine. It should have been a success for Sig, but it wasn't.
Well, I think that it was poorly timed because I remember
oddly shaped.
Yeah, but I remember that gun, you know, at the same time that gun came out, or the same time I became aware of it, you had the Shield, you had shortly thereafter the Glock 43.
And everybody wanted a striker fired, not a hammer fired. Yeah. So that's where they kind of messed up.
Yeah.
And I'm still waiting on the single stack version of the 320. Now, don't go out and use that as gospel that one is coming. It's not, but they want to play, be in the same field with the 43.
Seems
and
like
the
a
shield.
Natural
they
progression.
Need to.
Right.
Yeah.
It needs to happen, but the modularity of the frame being what it is and having to lift in and out, is that going to add fatness to the gun?
I don't think that'll work with
a
the
single stack 320.
Chassis.
Yeah. I think it's going to have to be, it's going to have to be embedded parts
or
it's going to
be
way
own.
Fat.
Well, that's the thing. It might be its own platform. So there might be a 320.
Well, the Shield
Slim.
Is not backwards compatible with the full-size M&Ps,
right.
even though
right.
it's considered an M&P series gun. Same with the Glock 43. It has to be kind of its own animal. And I think if they'll just get rid of the whole idea of, oh, modularity of the chassis and build it all into the gun and make a nice, slim, striker-fired, you know, along the same setup as the 320, I think it'll be a success.
Well, I mean, I think they could still do the modularity and just give you the option of a full-size single stack. There are people who have smaller hands that might enjoy that. And it becomes more like, you know, the car P9 or something like that, which is one of those guns that I thought would have been more successful than it is. But, you know, it's...
Well, the car P9 being all steel and heavy is its problem, but I like
the
little...
Well, the P9 is...
Oh, that's
is
the polymer. Yeah, the polymer one. The full-size car I can see the issue with. I like the polymer P9s.
Yeah.
I really do. But I've never stumbled across one at a, gee, that's too stupid cheap to pass up rate.
Well, that's the other thing. They're a little on the expensive side.
And the other issue I have is the magazines are still the weak link.
Right.
The gun runs fine with the magazine that's in it. It's the reload magazine where the top round may or may not be in the right position to go in. And that's a problem if you have that gun.
And the car does seem to be a gun that does need about 500 rounds put through it I would consider it.
Yeah, they've got heavy machine marks left in them and all that kind of stuff. So, yeah, they need to be smoothed out. But once you do that, they do seem to run.
Yeah. Now, Gary, you've recently, you know, you've lost a lot of weight.
Yeah.
You seem to be slimmer every time we see you. You know, Jason, you do too. And
I just want to be told I'm pretty and be held.
Well, you're not going to get that from this crew.
You know, that stubble's coming back, and if that beard comes back, you have no chance whatsoever of anybody calling you pretty.
Oh, that's no chance for you? I thought you liked the bear versus the twink.
You've been playing around with some appendix carry lately.
Yeah.
You know, an appendix is something that's gotten, it's kind of a renaissance of over the last couple of years where
indeed
a lot of people are going to it.
Mm-hmm.
I've done it, and if I do appendix carry, it's with my Shield.
Right.
And, I've tried a few different holsters,
mm-hmm.
and I just can't find anything that makes it to where I want to appendix on a regular basis.
Well, so here's the thing that I'm learning is
are
that
you appendixing today?
Today I am not. I'm pocket carrying today. doing the shield.
Well, maybe we should actually ask the person who is appendix carrying.
Oh,
today.
Yes. Mock me at will, but no, I can only appendix carry. There's two guns that I can comfortably appendix carry, and it's the 442, the handleless right. J-frames. I can do that just fine. And actually, mm-hmm. I find those quite comfortable to right. appendix carry. And today, just because of the proximity and the timing of getting up here, I have the Pico in the front of my pants today. The gun they love to hate. That
but
actually runs.
The thing is that Jason is a prime example of the issue that a lot of us run into is that with larger guns, it pushes out and it's not comfortable.
Well, and larger gut is what I have the issue
that's
of.
That's what I was going to get back to is that in losing
weight. Be gentle
weight,
with him, Gary. Be gentle with him.
Well, so, you know, there used to be this term that they called it the successful lifestyle body, meaning that you had time to work out and therefore were nice and slim. And I have not had that, you know, in a long time. And so, and coming back into that and losing weight and starting to play around with the appendix carry option, what I'm finding is, and I've had this discussion online and read some stuff about it from, you know, even from Todd Lewis Green and before he passed, and Travis Haley and some others. But it has a lot to do with how you choose to wear your pants. And let's face it, as we develop tactical girth, as one might call it, a lot of us tend to wear our waistline lower to, you know, so that our gut isn't making our pants so tight
well,
and uncomfortable.
Those of us who are old enough to remember watching I Love Lucy, anybody?
Yeah,
or even the black and white version of Gilligan's Island.
Right.
The actual GQ fashion, whatever way of wearing pants is the belt line is supposed to go across the belly button.
Right.
And there ain't anybody in this room that's wearing their belt line across
that's
their belly button.
That's how a gentleman wears pants.
We call it the Fred Mertz.
Right.
If you look back at Ricky's neighbor, Fred Mertz, who always like, why the hell does he wear his pants right, you know, under
well,
his armpits or whatever?
Exactly. But that was above his belly button.
Yeah, but in the grand scheme of things, that's the way it's supposed to be worn, and none of us wear it that way.
Very few of us do. Now, you can come up just short of that and not look like Steve Urkel. And if you can do that, and again, it is easier when you are slimmer. No two ways about it. If you got a bunch of, you know, if you're wearing a 44-inch waist, the fact is, especially if your gut sticks past your chest, which is typical, then yeah, you're going to have trouble trying to get away with doing appendix carry. The reality is that it works better with a, you know, a slimmer, more athletic build, mm-hmm. where you're, you know, when you look at suits, right? So you had three different cuts back in the day. You had a slim cut, an athletic cut, and what they used to call a portly cut.
Nowadays, portly?
I kid you not.
I called it husky. Isn't that what they came into JCPenney?
So officially, when you talk to a tailor, they would call it a portly cut. Nowadays, they call it the executive cut. But what you could tell about those was that the difference or what separated them was that with the slim cut, the chest and the waist were very close to each other. They might be within 5 inches of each other in terms of circumference. Whereas the athletic cut, it would be a 10 to 12 inch difference, to the advantage of the chest measurement. And then the portly cut would be the exact opposite. So you'd have a bigger waist than you had a chest.
Well, thank God I'm in athletic cuts because my pants are still smaller than my chest.
I had to go buy a suit one day, and I had one of my buddies with me. I think we were going to a funeral or something, and so we were each buying a suit. And I go pick mine out, and I come back, and he's just got this scowl on his face. And I go, what's the matter with you? And he goes, screw this place, man. It's time to leave. I said, why? He goes, because I went to get my size, and they had it listed as portly. I about died right there.
The tape measure don't lie, buddy. An inch is an inch no matter where you go.
He was pissed.
Yeah.
And then my reaction didn't help things.
No, it did not. It did not. But, you know, but that is a reality. So, we often talk about the benefits of being in shape, and I realize that sometimes just life gets in the way. Stuff happens. You know, even Larry Vickers got huge between being broken after 20 years in the military and all the jumps that he had and all this other stuff. So, you know, there were some guys who were running around going, oh, that's Fat Larry. But you know what? I would not pick a fight with Larry Vickers.
No, and I saw a picture of him the other day. And he looks like he's
exactly.
lost some weight.
He actually started doing CrossFit and started losing weight and getting back into shape. But there's still.
But you know what? That son of a bitch earned it.
Absolutely.
If he wants to be 400 pounds.
He can do it.
He can do it.
Absolutely. Yeah. But like I said, all of those things are factors. And so, you know, if you're deciding that you want to go play with the appendix carry option, the reality is that being in better shape makes it a hell of a lot easier. Mm-hmm. It gives you more options. But your holster makes a big difference too. I've played around with the Raven Concealment, the VG2, which is basically just a condom for your trigger. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's great, except that it's a collapsing holster. You can't reholster with one hand. Some people may argue whether or not that's important, but, you know, that's a reality of that system. But it is probably the smallest option there is and does let you get away with a full-size gun, whereas some older holsters might not. Now, the other holsters I'm playing with a lot right now are the Eidolon, which is also a Raven Concealment product, and G-Code's Incog. Between the two, I'm liking the Incog more.
Mm-hmm.
It works well with the Glock 19. The angle is adjustable just enough that I can wear that in that little, I think they call it the Ingable channel, which is kind of, you know, if you're getting into the successful lifestyle body, you start kind of getting that little V cut. Mm-hmm. And so it fits very neatly.
You mean that
into
line
that.
Between your nut and your leg?
Yes, exactly. I know you've never seen that.
The medical version there, yeah.
So when you're carrying appendix, you're carrying right-handed. Okay?
Yes.
So is the barrel pointed down the right side of your leg or down the inside of your left leg? Which side of the zipper are you doing it?
It is to the right of the zipper.
Okay.
For me. And that has worked. And what I like about appendix carry is really working. It, you know, as I started doing Krav a couple of years ago and have played around with BJJ and some other stuff, I'm finding that having a gun in appendix carry has its advantages in terms of defending the gun.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if someone tries to do a gun grab, when it's on your side at 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock, one, you can't monitor that very well. By comparison, whereas someone really has to be up front and know that gun is there to attack on the appendix side. The other thing is that it's accessible to both arms and accessible in the middle of rolling around on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
I can't really say that for the traditional method of carry. So I'm starting to like it for that reason too. And when I'm driving in a vehicle, I can still reach it very easily.
It's not as uncomfortable as you would think to sit in a vehicle and drive with an appendix carry.
Right, right. So you know, I'm not saying that I'm a total convert, but I'm starting to see a lot of advantages to appendix carry. Mm-hmm. I'm not quite ready to say that I'm going to switch to it, because the thing is, at the end of the day, what do I practice? And the reality is that tends to be strong side, 3-4 o'clock, somewhere in that range, because that's what I'm doing in IDPA, that's what I'm doing in USPSA. I don't get to practice that.
Mm-hmm.
So that now we get into the discussion that, you know, we used to have with Paul Howe and some of these other guys, where they say, well, you know, there's what I do in competition, and then there's what I do on the street, and well, because of what I do on the street, I can't do competition.
Mm-hmm.
So those are considerations for anybody who's thinking about it.
But with it, like me, I've got a duty holster. It's got to be in a certain spot, a certain way or whatever. So, and I've trained that way for 20 years now. Do I want to go back and go in the middle of the waistband? And I've done it a couple times just because if I know where I'm going to be working and doing stuff, I'm going to be bent over a lot, and I know my gun might stick out, then appendix might make sense.
Right.
You know, like sitting right here, we're all hunched forward over the table.
Right.
We're all leaned into the microphones.
Yeah.
I can feel the gun digging into me. But when Jeffrey said, you know, driving, it's not a problem, I sat back in my chair and was like, oh, I sit back when I drive. And
right.
You know, it feels completely different when you're sitting back in the chair versus when you're leaning forward in the chair.
Absolutely.
You know, but my lifestyle body – it's just strange. It's the shape of the gun more than anything for me.
It's the donut lifestyle body.
And I haven't had a donut in like 6 months. That pisses me off. Now, granted, I had ice cream yesterday, but I haven't had a donut in 6 damn months. Brain fart. No, the J-frame hammerless is just tailor-made to stick in the front of your pants.
Mm-hmm.
Round it off like a wet bar of soap. I have no issue with that. But the Glock, when you lay them side by side, the Glock 26 is basically the exact same size, but it's very squared and right angly and blocky. And the top of the slide where that rear sight is, that's where the problem is.
Right.
Whereas on a J frame, that's where it's rounded and curved in, and it works differently. Even though there's very little difference in dimensions of the guns, it's all on how it's rounded off.
I've tried that Eidolon that you talked about, and you know, it just
clunky.
Does not work for me.
Yeah.
I think it's a big, blocky, bulky. I'm not that impressed with it.
Yeah, compared to the Incog with G-Code and even, you know, Comptac's, 2 o'clock. Mm-hmm. By comparison, yeah, it is a big clunky holster.
Now we do have a guy that comes in here. He's a fairly well built, you know, Asian guy named Jim, and smokes Pall Mall filterless cigarettes and you know goes and does these 10-mile run and gun things. I don't see how he does it. But
with a cigarette while he runs,
yeah, probably. And he'll come in
like
in
an
jeans
old gunnery sergeant.
Yeah, he'll come in jeans and a t-shirt. You got no idea the guy's carrying a gun,
right?
And then he'll take his gun out, and he's got a full size P30 with extended mags and a red dot milled on there. And it's like, how are you hiding this thing, dude? So it's something that can definitely work out for people. It is faster,
yeah.
Typically on the draw, you know.
A lot of times it is, yeah.
That Eidolon, I just can't get behind it. I've tried it numerous times. I can't wear the clips over my belt. I have to clip it onto my jeans, which I'm not a fan of that, because then I'm you know, grabbing onto the holster as I'm drawing the gun.
Yeah. Well, you know, at the end of the day, this is where this would be the conversation between women, where that, you know, every woman's body is a different shape. Well, every dude's body is a different shape. And the reality is you're going to have to try out a lot of different, you know, we all have that bucket of holsters and belts and everything else that we tried that just did not work. And so, yeah, you may have to try out some other stuff out there. There's also Bravo Concealment here in Texas. Mm-hmm. So there are a lot of other options out there that you may have to try. Right now, those are the ones that I've tried. And yeah, between them, I'm liking the G-Code, probably the best of all for that mode of carry with my Glock 19. That's the other thing, is that I've been doing this without trying to play around with different guns.
Mm-hmm.
My Glock 19 has been my daily carry for better part of 15 years now. And so with that being the case, I don't want to change that. I don't plan on buying a new gun to correct it.
But CZP-10.
Until you shoot the P-10.
Yeah, not going to happen. I mean, I'll shoot the P-10. I have no problem finger banging somebody else's gun. I mean, I'm not going to change that. And so because of that, I have to find different options that may or may not work.
Yeah. Now, another option, if you're not too concerned about reholstering, when I mow my lawn, I use the Can-Can Concealment Sport Belt. Now, Can-Can is known for women's holsters. You know, it's a...
The flashbang.
It's the hip huggers. You know?
Oh, yes.
Kind of like a better version of the belly band.
Yep.
And the sport belt looks like the hip hugger, only it has paracord instead of lace. So, you know, it's not... Yeah, you know, like feminine or anything, but
looks like a girdle.
I was going to say corset, but hey, I don't judge. Holsters. I look forward to treating everybody with dignity and service respect, and respect, regardless of it.
Golly, you say that so much, we're starting to know your own line.
Right?
You know, if I'm mowing my lawn, I'm wearing that Can-Can sport belt. And usually I have a shield, the spare mag, my phone, you know, all kinds of stuff in there. So that is definitely another option, but it's not something that I go with if, say, I'm going to the movie theater or something like that.
Right.
I'm not wearing the sport belt. That's strictly a mowing the lawn or going for a jog thing.
Yep.
So
Pico is strictly, I was downstairs, the gun was sitting on the counter downstairs.
You were too lazy to walk upstairs.
I didn't
want to
go upstairs and get the Glock, so I just literally stuffed it.
Now, what are you going to do, being our law enforcement professional?
Yes.
If you leave here and you get to the stop sign and a criminal act is occurring in front of you.
I'm going to be a good witness. I don't have any ID on me. I don't have my badge. I'm off duty. I don't have a radio or backup or any type of body armor or PPE. Why would I interject myself into a situation where I'm not prepared to deal with it?
And you could get shot by one of your fellow brethren.
Yes.
Yes.
Or somebody, you know, or the criminal.
Or somebody else. So.
But, you know. I'm not getting paid to protect and serve right this second, so.
But you're always on duty.
This gun is not my duty gun. And we discussed beforehand how, you know, they really want me to be on duty right now. And I had to tell some people, no, I'm not. I haven't had a day off in X number of days. I've been working 12-hour shifts. No. So, and also I could bring entertainment to you folks.
And I'm sure they're very appreciative of it.
Literally dozens of people are waiting with bated breath to listen to our podcast, as we always say. But well, this brings up something, as Gary and I have been discussing online. We could bring our typed argument on the line here. We had a video going around last week of a traffic stop, and we don't know the genesis of this stop or the length of the chase, or if it was simple traffic or if it was a robbery or assault or what have you. But we have a guy that's getting out of his car And one looks like trooper is standing there yelling, get on the ground, get on the ground. And the guy's just standing there. His hands are up. You can see him. Not up. They're kind of out in front
they're
of
out
him.
Out in front of him.
But, and he's just standing there like, why? What? What's wrong? And
he's
and
not just, complying.
He's definitely not complying. And he has five or six very clear commands. Get on the ground. Get on the ground. Get on the ground. And the guy's just standing there like, no. And
well,
out of the side of the camera.
He never says no.
Well, he is not complying.
He's not complying.
His body language is saying no.
No. And
one could argue he looks confused and stupid, but.
Or he might be so drunk or high, he doesn't know right. what the hell is going on. But the red and blue flashy lighty things usually give you a clue. Mm-hmm. That and the fact it doesn't look like he's on a road. It looks like he's in the middle of a field at this point. So obviously right. this isn't the random stop. And the fact there's already two officers on scene. This has been a chase.
Yeah.
For God knows how long or what started it.
Yeah.
Anyway, he's just standing there. He's not compliant. And out of the side of the screen, you see Deputy 2.0 come up with a shotgun and waylay this guy upside the head with a shotgun.
Butt
and,
stroke to the head.
And he gets he to the ground. He went right to the ground.
Very compliant.
But he didn't get compliant because as soon as he went to the ground and that deputy ditched the shotgun and tried to go into mount to cuff him, the guy starts fighting.
Well, yeah, but is that he's regained consciousness? Because he goes limp when he gets hit.
That's a matter of speculation and judgment
oh,
at that point.
Okay.
But he's still got a hell of a lot of fight in him once they get him on the ground.
Yeah.
And you know, Gary didn't think that was an appropriate use of force. And I chimed in that you know, head strokes are not, you know, well received unless they're at a deadly force level. You know, our agency says you're not supposed to be doing that. Now, his agency might have a different rule of thumb.
Now, but what about what happened before the video started rolling? Could any of his actions on the way to the vehicle being in on the side of, or
that
in the,
was
the ditch
crux
or wherever it is?
Of everything that started the argument online, as I said, I don't think I would have butt stroked him because I think we're at deadly force at that point. But if the trooper can articulate why he had to go to the butt stroke, then he's good.
Yeah, like what if he drove at another vehicle, at another.
What if he's already involved in a shooting? What if he's wanted for a homicide? What if he's just involved in a liquor store holdup? We don't know any of that.
All things the video doesn't tell us.
That doesn't tell us that.
But the standard that most of us live with is mm-hmm. that if in that moment does he present that threat? Can we articulate that we see
has
that
has he already
threat
had
right
a shots fired call on him?
I understand he's already had it, but we
he's
come
not
back
compli-
to. But, I get that, but we come back to is does his actions at that moment that we see
okay.
show that?
But we don't know the totality of circumstances.
I don't.
We
disagree.
Don't know how many other people are in that car. We don't know what's been clipped or if there's a hostage involved or what. There's 500 other things that we don't know, and everybody's going to make the judgment based on. I saw it. That's wrong. Well, no, it's not wrong. And you wonder why people come back and it's like, well, how could they acquit him? Well, because the jury actually heard the whole story and knows why. And I wrote a couple of, you know, what I thought was like, oh, well, where's a plausible explanation? Blah, I banged it out. And Gary, some of your friends took great umbrage that I used logic to explain a perfectly reasonable explanation of what would happen.
Because they
and
read it
that's
as
bullshit. No, you're lying to cover. No, I said I wouldn't have hit him, but these are, well, this is what a defense
agreed.
Attorney would come up with.
But we come back to sometimes it's how you said things. And if you leave it as, well, as long as you write the report right, then
I get that. But it comes back to, can you articulate why you've done anything? And this goes not just for the cop, this goes for any person. Because after you have to fight for your life, whether it's a robbery, whatever, you're going to have to articulate what was reasonable about what you did.
Agreed. But we also tell people that the situation can be fluid.
Yes.
And so if we talk about how we end up transitioning into suddenly going from being a defender to an aggressor all the
yes.
time. And so and the reality is that, you know, in this case, you got it on video. So the jury's perception of that video and any other evidence you present.
And possibly the 30 minutes of chase beforehand or whatever the original call was. And then we also are going to get into other things of, as a civilian, you don't have to move in and take him into custody.
Oh, absolutely
not. You're supposed
to
disengage. Right. As the officer, I'm not done till he's in a cell.
Agreed.
So I have to move in and solve the issue.
You do have to move in and solve the issue, but most people would say you're supposed to use what? The minimum amount of force necessary to effect that arrest.
I'm allowed to overcome whatever resistance level he has. I can go above and beyond
his
level of force.
Yeah, you can exceed his level by one, right?
Yes.
That's the rule.
Now, have we already arrested this guy? Is this local Joe shitbag? And I've arrested him 37 times in the past 5 years. Mm-hmm. And I know that, you know, he's 45 years old now, but when he was 19, he was a 4-time Golden Gloves boxing champion. Mm-hmm. And he owns his own Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu gym.
Right.
Yeah, now, by the looks of this guy, I don't think he owned his own gym. Well,
but you could look like George Foreman and knock me out with one punch.
Agreed.
And George Foreman at 65 is still a deadly force puncher, now, I guarantee.
Just to put it out there, when I saw the 10 seconds of when I first saw the video, what went through my mind was, okay, this vehicle, this van is sitting in a field with, and it's been stopped by a friggin' tree or something.
Yes. This and there's guy, already multiple officers on scene.
I'm hearing, get down, get down. Yeah. And this guy is not going anywhere. And then I see the strike to the head and it made me laugh. And I was totally fine with it. Because
from a legal standpoint, we can't use humor. if we could, but we can't, you know?
No, but I could see that there was a reason why his vehicle was not on a road.
Right.
There were multiple lights in the background. But this guy is not complying.
But that's not articulable reason to use that level of force that could be construed as deadly force.
Now, to me, it was okay. Yeah, I could see that this guy was doing something beforehand.
And I said I wouldn't have butt-stroked him to the head, but – now, can I go back and play devil's advocate as a defense attorney and come up with why I can articulate that strike? And I can come up with a lot of reasons.
Sure.
But in the end, that's what sparked Gary and I's and Gary's friend. I won't mention the name, but someone was quite distraught with me.
Yeah.
I wasn't quite called the jackbooted Nazi at the time, but how could you say – and I was like, did you read the part where I said any defense attorney would say blah, blah, blah? Did you read the part where I said I wouldn't have hit him, but – And we can go into that. And I can say from personal experience, having to deal with someone when I had a shotgun, when I first came on, one of the first places I was at, we got issued a shotgun. Not a shotgun with a sling, not a shotgun with any type of holder and stuff. And so once you unass the car with a shotgun, you're married to that long gun.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And if you're having to deal with multiple threats, multiple people, and most of them, when you point a shotgun at them, say, get on the ground, they get on the ground. Some of them stand there and go, what you gonna do? What you gonna do? What you gonna do? Now I have to deal with this guy. I have
a
loaded
shotgun. What do you do with the shotgun?
Can I just unass it on the ground with other people that are running around still? No, I have to hold on to that shotgun. Now I have to move in, and can I do other things? I can't go to my baton. I can't do, I mean, what other lethal force? I can't do hands-on or whatever. So now I'm restricted to doing things with that shotgun. Mm-hmm. And with that shotgun, is giving him the muzzle the appropriate thing? No, because I'm definitely at deadly force. Now, smacking him with the butt of the gun could be construed as deadly force, but I could argue it's a lot less deadly than the other end, right?
Yeah.
And if I go in for him and try to do a stomach blow or a strike into the midsection and his arms are already at about shoulder level like they were,
he could be grabbing
am I
for
giving
it.
Him that gun that I don't have a retention device, which is what a sling is,
right.
A retention device like a holster. So now we're into the different levels of things. If I'm married to this weapon, I still have to use force. I still have to affect compliance. And I've given him multiple opportunities to comply on his own, and he said, I'm not going to comply. Now I have to use pain compliance or some type of strike. So civilians don't see that side of it, that I can't just unass that shotgun and go to town.
Would you have preferred maybe a taser instead of?
I don't have a taser.
Okay. Maybe that's
and
why.
And in a plainclothes capacity, I don't carry a taser. In a plainclothes capacity, I'm usually not – I have a OC spray hooked. That's the less lethal I carry.
Yeah.
Depending on what the wind is that night, can I use OC
without
from his position
–
against him at that time. An OC is not a incapacitating device to the point of it stops you physically.
Right.
A taser locks your muscles and can physically incapacitate you. OC just makes it hurt really, really, really bad.
Yeah.
But I can still run, fight, swing, and do whatever. So is OC the right choice at that particular time?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Again, because I can't articulate what was going on with this guy. Do we think this guy just left a dope house and he's high on PCP? Now, well, he's high on PCP. Do I want to go in and fight with him, or do I want to go in and clock him upside the head? Because I know that most stuff I do to him, he's just going to go, ha, 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 and not care.
Uh-huh.
And we've seen a recent video of naked dude coming out of a convenience store that takes several taser ends and doesn't seem to give a shit about the taser ends, and he's high on PCP.
Yeah.
So there's all these things you have to take into account that once you sit down and logically explain to him, people go, oh, well, I never thought of that. Well, you posted a 30-minute hate video about kill these damn cops and fuck all cops and blah, 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 but you never thought of that, did you? So sometimes people just need to back up and – that's why you'll hear in the Supreme Court decision on use of force, which is Graham v. Connor is the main one. There's several of them, but that's the one that establishes that an officer is judged based on what a reasonable officer would do presented with similar facts and circumstances. Not what a reasonable person would do. We're not talking what Sally Hausfrau. You know, I'm the 40-year-old housewife that washes dishes for a living, and I think they were mean to that young man. They should have just given him a stern talking to. I mean, we're not based on what her reasonable level of force is. We're based on what a reasonable officer's level of force would be,
yeah,
which is a totally different scenario. So, again, is that butt stroke what I would have done? Probably not. Then again, we don't have wooden shotguns anymore. When I first came on, we had wood butt shotguns, wood forends, and all that kind of stuff. Now we have plastic shotguns. So could I go in and articulate that if I butt stroke someone to the head, that's deadly force? Well, with a wooden shotgun butt that weighs 20 ounces by itself and a steel butt plate on the end of it, you know, an old Ithaca or something like that, yeah, I'd split somebody's head right open. I think we're definitely at deadly force with a wooden shotgun butt. Am I at deadly force with a hollow plastic shotgun butt? Am I at deadly force if it's a Mako or a Fab Defense that we know if you look at them wrong are going to snap off? You know, the Remington shotgun butt, if anybody's ever taken one off, when you remove the butt pad on the end of it, it's an inch thick rubber butt pad. You take that off and you look in there. It's a hollow plastic tube that's maybe 3 millimeters, 4 millimeters thick tops.
Right.
So could I argue that, well, I've got a 1-inch rubber pad I'm hitting him with, which I am, designed to absorb recoil and shock. And I'm hitting him with a hollow tube. What's stronger, a human skull that we've seen take blows with multiple smacks with flashlights and radios and the guy's still laughing at you? Or that hollow tube that has not much mass to it and is designed to break away probably before a skull would? Mm-hmm. Now could I go before a court and a jury and say, well, that wasn't a deadly force blow given the options that I had available to me. It was less of a strike than if I'd use a flashlight or a baton or something. It was less of a strike than if I'd use, you know, my elbow or something. I didn't want to use the barrel. I used the least amount of force I had reasonably available to me at the time.
Yeah.
You know, and I typed that all up the other day. I was still fascist. That's why people don't trust the cops. And y'all just lie for each other. I'm like, I'm saying what a defense attorney would say. But there's usually a reasonable enough explanation that you can't go beyond a reasonable doubt of saying that cop was trying to kill that guy.
Yeah.
You know,
like I said, I'm okay with it. And let's give up. Let's give a Guns Over Texas thumbs up. Speaking of crazy naked guys, to HPD, you know.
Oh yeah,
last week on the metro
rail. Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
That's a different one. That's another naked guy. There's one that's coming out of a convenience store that soaks up a lot of taser.
Yeah, no.
HPD this one got a good dart spread.
Yeah,
they dropped that guy.
Oh, this guy. It looked like Cat Williams came out of the metro rail.
He's a little tall for Cat Williams.
I look forward to serving everybody in my community with honor and dignity and respect. And
well, let's do it for all intents and purposes. Let's say Cat Williams came out of the metro rail and he's buck naked and he's got a can of bug spray.
Yeah.
And is high as a
kite. And he had the pump thing. So it's a wand with a pump. And I'm going,
it's like he raided some landscapers. How did you get
onto the train with nobody noticing that?
Well, how did he get on there butt naked?
That's what I mean.
He obviously stopped at someone's landscaping truck, grabbed a thing of, you know, ortho weed killer or something along those lines, and then jumped on light rail.
Now, you know, if HPD would have shot this guy, you know, they tased him after he slapped the bejesus out of one of their officers.
Yeah, he slapped the
officer. One of those in the day of cell phone cameras. That guy is so lucky for cell phone cameras.
Yeah. Now, if
what happened? He tripped and fell.
If they would have shot him, that we'd hear, oh, he only had bug spray. He only had bug spray. Let me tell you, one time I went to a restaurant and the waiter came up to our table and his eyes were nearly swollen shut and he had pus coming out of them. And I go, Jesus, dude, okay, what happened to your face?
What date had he had?
I said, what happened to your face? And he goes, oh, man, my girlfriend got mad at me, and she sprayed me in the eyes with wasp spray. And I went, okay, we'll take 2 iced teas. And he walked off, and I grabbed my wife by the hand, and we got out of there.
Because crazy girlfriend might show up to finish the deal.
Well,
only this time she's got an SKS.
I didn't even think about that. I just thought, this dude's got pus coming out of his eyes. I don't want him serving me.
Say it again, Jeff. Say it again.
What? This dude has pus coming out of his eyes?
The look on your face as you say pus.
Oh, it was disgusting. It was so gross.
Yeah, now we're not saying that we're advocating using wasp spray.
No,
as a
it's not.
Weapon.
It's
no,
not.
No.
But
no,
you,
there's no telling what else, you know.
Now,
besides
would we
wasp
be
spray
at deadly force if I could say that wasp spray is risk of serious bodily injury? Mm-hmm. Is something, if you lose your eyes, are you screwed for life in every way, shape, form, and fashion? Now, sure, we know pepper spray is going to make you blind for 30 minutes, but you're going to come back from it. Mm-hmm. Wasp spray? How many long-term tests have we had of guys being sprayed in the eyes with wasp spray that may or may not come back from that? I don't
Well, they sprayed a bunch of rabbits because that's how it got
approved. Yeah, I still might be a deadly force if someone's going to put some wasp spray on me. No. That falls squarely in the stupid game, stupid prizes.
I get that one. I'm not willing to defend that one myself.
Because my 9 has a little bit more range than your 20-foot of wasp spray.
Yeah.
You want to play trade shot for shot? We'll see who comes out ahead. Oh, and we're running out of time, but the video of lawnmower drive-by shooting guy.
Oh, man. Set
this
up. Let's
save 5 minutes extra. Okay.
Yeah, set this up.
We've got kooky old neighbor guy, and we have
old,
not as old
fireman.
Fireman guy. Fireman is like
40. His name's not Raul Rodriguez.
No. This fireman's in his mid-40s. Kooky old crazy guy is late 50s somewhere.
Right.
And apparently they've had an ongoing feud for several years since they moved in. And I don't think it's the firefighter guy just from the video I saw. I think we have someone off their nut in presenileness, drunkenness, just – there's an asshole next door.
Yeah, I know what it's like to live next door to this guy.
Oh, really?
Jeffrey took his neighbor's gun, I think?
Well, we'll get into that. But we already have enough problems that there's like dozens of police reports filed against both of them calling on each other.
Cameras strategically placed
at ingress points because basically anywhere there's a gap in the fence where this guy has tried to come through before, the firefighter has set up cameras, and they're even called incog cameras or something. They're hidden like in rocks and stuff. So he's got these hidden cameras pointing at any spot on the fence where the guy can wiggle through or do whatever. Firefighter guy looks like he's put chicken wire in some of these gaps in the poles, some other stuff to try to block it. Video starts with old dude on a lawnmower. He comes up, and he gets off the mower, and he tries to get in between. He monkeys with the fence for a minute. We really don't know what he's doing with it, but he's jacking with it. And then he starts saying – you hear the firefighter like, hey, you need to mind your own business, stay on your own property. And the guy's like, oh, I see you're out here with your slut wife and blah, blah, blah. And just starts cussing him and MFing him and all this. So old guy gets on his lawnmower, starts to drive off. Firefighter guy walks over to ostensibly check the fence to see if he's broken through at any point. And guy is on the lawnmower, throws it in reverse, backs up. And as he backs up, he
whips
under his shirt, whips out a revolver.
Yep.
And points it at firefighter guy. Firefighter guy raises his hands, steps backwards to feign compliance as he's backing away, and spins. And as he spins, whap, whap, whap. And he goes to town. He strokes off at least 9 or 10 right there. He put 4 in the old guy's chest.
Yep.
With sucking chest wounds. Old guy is still in the hospital in critical condition. But at the time of the shooting, old guy goes down and still returns 6 rounds from his revolver back in the young guy's direction, and then stands up and basically goes, God damn it, and walks off like nothing happened.
Right.
With 4 through his chest and sucking chest wounds on all of them. So I want to know what firefighter dude was carrying, because I want to not buy that brand ammo. But we still have to know, no matter
what. G2, rest in peace.
But no matter what you have, and no matter – he could have had the highest quality ammo, HST or Golden Dots or whatever. You don't know if you missed anything vital. He might have punched plenty of holes in the guy's intestines, and the guy's going to be in a colostomy bag forever. But if you didn't hit his ticker or hit his spine, you didn't turn him off. And the guy walks off at that point, and both of them call the cops and say the other one started it, but there's camera proof on there. Now, I don't know who to side with, and other people saying, well, that was premeditated murder is the only reason he had a camera there. I'm like, no, I think he just has a history of it. The cops go, well, you said one thing happened, and he said the other thing happened, and we don't know who's telling the truth, that he said screw it and went out and bought cameras.
Yeah.
But I think those cameras are going to save that dude from a murder charge.
They already have. The word is that there's no intention of prosecuting. Now, I think still has to go to a grand jury, and I don't know what the
local
laws are.
Yeah, but once I saw that, and it's clearly in a freeze frame that the old dude pulls a gun and points at him for nothing.
Right.
I'm on my own property, standing on my own fence, and you roll up and point a gun at me.
Right.
And the guy has already been arrested once for stabbing the firefighter. Firefighter has been stabbed by old guy. They had a couple of mutual combats where they pushed each other and stuff. And apparently old dude pulled out a knife, didn't stab him, like stabbed him in the arm or something.
Yeah.
So it's like, you've already stuck me with a knife once. You've already come over onto my property and shown deadly intent. So I'm walking around with a pistol from now on.
Right. Well, and that was the
because old
thing.
Guy's off his nut. Yeah. You know, you don't know what crazy is, and crazy doesn't care the cops are going to come. Crazy doesn't care you have a gun. Crazy's just fucking crazy.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. And one of the other things that I think was said about this particular case was that the old guy apparently stole that gun.
Yes. Old guy is apparently had – because he had that felony assault charge on him for the knife and can't own a gun.
Yeah.
So he had a stolen handgun. So I'm on my own property, minding my own business. You pull a gun on me first and I smoke you. And you're a felon who's already assaulted me twice and has come on my property and can't own a gun. And
somebody to argue in your behalf.
I think it's going to be pretty easy for the grand jury to make sense of all this, unless Indeed. It's your Facebook buddy. But he's probably a really nice guy. Actually, I agree with a lot of the shit he posts. I'm just picking on you, man.
It is what it is. All right.
Anyway, that was something I meant to touch on earlier, and we got sidetracked on other stuff and forgot. But
it was a good shoot, though.
It's a good shoot, and it does come back to the point that if it's your side of the story versus his side of the story and there's no other evidence, yeah, there's physical evidence, but in the end, we have the physical evidence of, okay, you fired 9 shots and hit 4, he fired 6 shots and hit none. Who shot first? Well, I can't tell that from just gunshot residue or from brass casings on the ground or anything else. I can't tell anything from that, except I can see the brass was on your yard. And I can see that his blood is on his yard.
Right.
You just walked up and shot him in his yard when he was minding his own business. And that's what you don't know how they're going to word it, you know?
Yeah.
This peaceful old man was minding his own business, and this rapscallion young firefighter who just wanted to, you don't know. So security cameras are never going to stop a crime. I'm living proof as my stuff's been broken into with cameras as they look and wave at the camera breaking into my damn car. But it is going to record the incident, and if there's a prosecution in the future, it gives a much clearer incident after the fact. It won't stop the event, but it can help make sense of the event, and it could save you in the end.
I even have to drive with a camera because of my next-door neighbor. We were going opposite ways down our street one day, and he moved over into my lane and missed my vehicle by just a few inches. I even had a witness that saw everything, who the witness had previous run-ins with the neighbor. And when the police came out, when I called them to come out and say, hey, this guy drove at my truck, he missed me by just inches, I got a witness down the street down there, they go talk to the witness and, come back, well, we're not going to do anything about it. Well, why not? You don't have a dash cam. Are you kidding me? I got a witness. Well, doesn't matter. Need a dash cam.
Real secret, Jeff, is to have the hole dug beforehand. And you got to already have the lime out there, too. I'm just...
Carpet?
In this movie I saw. Yeah, you got to be able to fix the carpet, too. Or a lethal weapon. Yeah. They call it a drop cloth for a reason.
Well, before
I'm
going to
invite him to dinner. Why am I standing on plastic?
Before we say anything that gets us into future trouble.
It's a movie I saw.
We're going to wrap this thing up. So thanks for listening. Shoot straight.